So let's talk about meditation. It is the base of a mindfulness practice. Some people tell me that they have a mindfulness practice without any meditation, but I don't know any better way to work with the mind than in meditation. And the intention in meditation practice isn't to forcibly control the mind, but to perceive very clearly its patterns. Some of those are very healthy and some of those are harmful, and we can become aware of those. But the attitude is always one of curiosity and openness and kindness and acceptance, so that we can see what's here to be discovered and be with it without struggling. And really, I consider meditation the path to an unconditional friendship with myself. And just by consciously being with whatever's unfolding within ourselves with love and sensitivity, learning evolves and wisdom begins to emerge in a very powerful way. So the first step along the meditation path is to begin to train for a stability of mind that can hold it all, a type of mind that is comfortable with just being with whatever is rather than doing. And this is very difficult because it's the exact opposite kind of mind that we're using in a lot of our lives. It's the exact opposite kind of mind that helps us achieve our goals and manage the routine daily details of our life. The doing mode involves things like solving problems and analysis and judgment and comparison. And we can't function in the world without the doing mind. But because we're using it so much, it's overdeveloped. And it's also the mode of mind that is really underneath some of our greatest achievements, as well as some of our disease or suffering. So the being mode that we're trying to develop in meditation is the exact opposite of this. It doesn't come from pushing and achieving. And rather than thinking about things from a problem-solving mode, we experience them directly. So it's an entirely different way of knowing than what's associated with the kind of mind that we're usually walking around with. And it's not better, it's just different. But like I said, it takes some training to develop it because the doing mode of mind is so overdeveloped. In fact, for myself, I used to think that just focusing on this doing mode of mind was how one became a better person. And of course, what I didn't understand then is we can't problem solve our emotions. It doesn't work very well. And when we treat our emotions, especially our negative and unpleasant emotions, as enemies to be overcome, we get into trouble. Because in dwelling on how to get rid of things, our whole experience becomes one of contraction, and then the experience of life itself begins to narrow. So with the practice of meditation and mindfulness, we train the muscles of the being mode to cultivate this acceptance and this gentleness. And we intentionally welcome and turn toward whatever arises, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. And we train for the being mode not only because it's foreign to us, but it's required at precisely those times when we are least likely to be able to employ it, when we're in a tornado of reactive habit energy that just takes over. So we're just training for a stability of mind that can hold it all, and a type of silence that comes from our heart and not from the outside. And it doesn't mean that we're not doing anything. It just means that we're cultivating a being so that we're less disturbed in the midst of all of this chaos. And that's the crux of the stability of mind that we're training for. And it's a non-striving orientation, and it releases us from the goal focus of the mind. And with time, what I really learned with meditation is that the quality of my doing is actually dependent on the quality of my being. And for years, I thought it was the other way around. And so that was a lovely discovery. So the way we develop and train the being mode is to consciously choose where and how to pay attention. And for this purpose, we select a relatively neutral object for ourselves that isn't charged intellectually or that's not stimulating in some way. And we do that precisely so that we can develop some mental steadiness. So some people use a mantra for this, some people use an object, but we'll use the breath and an awareness of our body for this purpose. And what we do is we just simply return, and I'll walk you through it the first time, but there are three steps in meditation. The settling, where we're getting into our posture, coming into our body, and then beginning to notice that we're breathing and focusing on the sensations of our breathing and returning to the sensations of the breathing over and over once we notice that our mind has wandered. And that's how we train for that stability of mind. And one of the most challenging early reactions to a beginning meditation practice is this sense of frustration and impatience with the wandering mind. You know, you're sitting there and you feel some sensations in your knee and you think about the x-ray that was just taken of your elderly parent's knee and how they're going to have that knee replacement and what you're going to do to help them, and the mind just will spin out in lots of different directions. And we don't have to make the mistake of ending up in a battle for control of our minds when this happens. And we have a tendency to think that when we get distracted by thoughts or body sensations, when we're taken away from the breath, that the work of meditation is being interrupted whenever the mind wanders. But actually, the critical part of meditation is being aware that the mind has wandered. So that is the moment that we bring our attention back. And if you have to do that 100 times during a single meditation, that's 100 successes. Because once again, you're training your mind for that type of awareness. And we're simply training to develop a quality of kindness and acceptance toward the wandering mind. And the expectations of the doing mind that is so well trained is going to enter in. So we're going to wonder, we're going to focus some on what we ought to be feeling. And the judgments of the doing mind will come in and start talking to us or whispering to us, and we'll become aware of the coulda, shoulda, woulda, oughta thoughts. And we can just treat those with some friendly interest and recognize them as old acquaintances and begin to discover some of the patterns of the mind. And over time, these goal-driven states will become more familiar and less of an enemy. So meditation, the most important thing to understand about meditation is that it can't be approached with project mentality. If you approach it as a self-improvement project, it's just going to be one more thing you don't think you're good enough at. And that's the opposite kind of thing that we're training for. So the running commentary going on that comes from that doing mind isn't something that obstructs or undermines our attempts to get on with the proper business of meditation. That's a common misconception. The awareness of these patterns of thought is meditation, not an attempt at meditation. And practicing the being mode of mind is very much like when you're a friend and you're deeply listening to somebody, you're bearing witness to their experience. You're just bearing witness to the full expressions of experience within your heart and your mind and your body. And in addition to the breath, the body with its physical sensations is a great place to start cultivating a more direct and experiential and sensory way of being and knowing. It's something that we can use to go right to the body sensations. It's something that we can use to short-circuit that doing mode of mind that takes us into ruminating and perseverating about things. And we can short circuit it in favor of simply being with. And we just bring some interest and curiosity to the sensations themselves, and then we're in direct contact. We're being with the sensations and feelings in each moment. So that's a way to simply tune in to the present moment without being so overwhelmed by it. So here's the Cliff Notes version of meditation. If you are more committed to your breathing than to all your resentments and your fantasies and your judgments and your comparisons and your memories and your to-do list, then your preoccupation with all these other things will eventually fall away. Before we assume our meditation postures, I just want to read you something that Thich Nhat Hanh often uses as an analogy that represents how we approach meditation. He uses the analogy of the wave in an ocean to help us understand the attitudes that meditation and mindfulness develop. So here's what he says. A wave is made of water, but sometimes she forgets. A wave is supposed to have a beginning, an end, a coming, a going. A wave can be higher or lower, more or less beautiful than other waves, and if she is caught in these notions, she will suffer a lot. If the wave realizes she is water, she enjoys going up as the wave and going down as the wave, enjoys being this wave and that wave, the other wave, without discrimination, not looking for water, but being water in the present moment. Our wave, knowing she is water, is no longer afraid of beginning, ending, coming up, going down, and can enjoy every moment. So the understanding that Thay is trying to convey in that lovely passage is that water is not for or against the variety of the waves. The water doesn't make any judgment, but simply embraces all of the waves that dance upon its surface. And likewise with meditation, we're learning to embrace the variety of waves that just play out on the vastness of our consciousness and being. And we just let ourselves open to these movements that touch us with the confidence that we need not be swept away by any of the movements. So let's begin. We begin by settling in to a comfortable but stable posture. If you're sitting on a chair, you can try sitting away from the back of the chair so that your back is self-supporting. There are three points of contact if you're on the chair, two with your feet on the floor, and the third with the buttocks. If you're on a cushion, if you're inflexible like I am, you can put something under your knees so that there's the two points of contact are with the knees. Otherwise, the knees are on the floor. And the trick is to put enough height under your seat to raise the buttocks. So allow your back to just adopt an erect and dignified and comfortable posture. And you can close your eyes if that feels comfortable. And if not, you can just let your gaze fall unfocused on the floor, slightly in front of you. So that's the first step in meditation, is just settling in. The second step is we bring an awareness to our body. We actually come into our bodies. And you can do this in a couple of ways. You can simply focus on the level of physical sensations by focusing your attention on the sensations of touch and contact and pressure in the body where it makes contact with the floor or whatever you're sitting on. And you can explore those sensations and come into your body. Or you can actually do a little scan. So you can start at the top of your head. Let's do that. Just start at the top of your head and relax the top of your head. And consciously relax your face. You can either smile or you can just drop your jaw about a quarter of an inch, and sometimes that will relax the face muscles. And let your eyes be soft, and your jaw be soft. And your back is erect but not rigid. Let your neck be soft. Feel your shoulders. And just let them drop. I like to move down to my belly and just let it drop right into my lap. Just totally relax it. Let your hips be loose. And just spend a minute coming into your body in this way. So after we settle and then come into our body, we begin to bring our awareness to the changing patterns of physical sensations as the breath moves in and out of your body. So just notice that you are in fact breathing. If you're not, I hope you start. And just notice the physical sensations and where they're the strongest. Might be in your belly. You might notice the belly rising and falling, the sensations of stretching as the abdominal wall gently expands with each in-breath, and the sensations of the gentle release as it deflates with each out-breath. Or you might notice that you experience these sensations on your upper lip or as a warmth or coolness in your nostrils or as the chest is rising and falling. So just notice where you experience the sensations of your breathing the strongest. Sometimes it helps if we just say in on the in-breath and out on the out-breath. And just keep the volume very low and very gentle. Anytime we're labeling anything, we're paying attention to the tone that we talk to ourselves with. You might notice a space at the end of the in-breath and before the out-breath starts and at the end of the out-breath before the in-breath starts. Now, if your mind has already wandered away, that's just totally okay. There's no need to try to control your breathing in any way. Simply let your body breathe by itself as best as you can. And just bring this attitude of allowing and inviting to your experience. There's nothing that needs to be fixed. There's no state to achieve. Best as you can, just surrender to your experience without requiring it to be anything different than what it simply is. So if your mind has wandered away, as it inevitably will do, this is the critical moment because you've noticed what's going on and you've come back to the present moment with this awareness. And just gently escort your attention back to the breath and simply resume attending to the changing pattern of the physical sensations that come with each in-breath and each out-breath. And as best you can, bring a quality of kindness to this awareness. And seeing the repeated wanderings of the mind as opportunities to cultivate patience and acceptance within yourself and great compassion toward your experience. Once again, if your mind has wandered somewhere and you've wandered away from your breath, just notice and gently escort your attention back to the seat of the breath. And this is how we train for the stability of mind, to hold it all. Let's just return over and over again to the seat of the breath. Some people find it helpful when their attention wanders from the breath to notice what the mind has been pulled away to. And sometimes it's helpful to simply notice that. Might be planning, and just label it planning. Might be a strong emotion, joy, sadness. Might be a body sensation, heat, itching, vibration. Might be a song in your head, song, tightness in the belly, judging, remembering. And some people find that this labeling process helps us become more intimate with the unconscious grooves of our mind. Two helpful tips in the labeling process, and this is the last time you'll hear my voice. Sometimes for me, I'll just add a word, sadness, and that's okay. Judging, and that's okay. But I really pay attention to the volume and the tone of the label. Keep the volume very low so that it's in the background, not the foreground, and very gentle. You can always also notice what happens to whatever your mind has been pulled away to as you pay attention to it. It's often changing. And then just come back again to the seat of the breath and return to that seat of the breath over and over. So we have about 15 minutes for questions, and Janet is going to bring a mic forward.
I guess I have a question about when intense emotion arises, and I really don't have any idea why. I don't know what my question is. It's just like...
The question, how to work with intense emotions?
How to work with it. I was going to say what to think about it. Thank you.
Well, one of the things that's important to understand about the mind is A lot of times we try to push, what we try to push away, what we resist will persist. So, for example, let's give you a little exercise right now. For the next 30 seconds, I want you not to think about an elephant. Do not. I repeat, do not think about an elephant. Do everything you can not to think about an elephant. How'd that work for you? So again, one of the ways of, if the emotion is really intense and it's overwhelming you, one of the ways to short-circuit that is to go and be right with the body sensations and just experience where in your body you feel it. It might be a tightness in the stomach. It might be some sort of contracting. But that's a way to help us tune in a way that isn't overwhelming. And the other thing is that a lot of times once you tune in, we find that these things aren't going to kill us, even though it feels that way sometimes because we can get so anxious. But what happens for me is when I end up going to the center and actually feeling them in the way that I describe, I notice that they're just really little pockets of energy. And that when I pay attention, even, I've noticed this, even at times when I've been in that black hole of depression, if I really pay attention to the changing texture, that it's not this solid, solid thing, that it is changing and moving. If you're really anxious and there's something that's going on and you just feel that it's so intense, one of the things that I like to do is really just take an in-breath in, a big in-breath in, just hold it for a couple of seconds and breathe out through my mouth. And I find that just doing that, if I'm really, really anxious, sometimes will calm me down. But the important thing is if you try to push these away or suppress them or tell yourself you shouldn't be feeling them, it'll be like the elephant exercise. They'll get stronger. So if you can just turn toward them and notice what they actually feel like in your body, two things happen. One, you short-circuit. You short-circuit the intense ruminations and perseverating about them. And two, they begin to change and move. And they're not this, we find out that they're not this solid block that they often feel like.
Thank you very much, Sherry, for that lovely session. I have a comment and I would like to share with the group is that when I feel a very strong emotion, sometimes it is useful for me to express it physically and instead of just breathing, which sometimes doesn't help, I feel the sadness. If I go deep, deep inside, it's very sad, and I start crying, and crying and crying, but very softly, as my tears come out, and sometimes my body shakes. It is like spring water, actually. It refreshes my whole system, and I feel so compassionate towards myself. And then all of a sudden, it's tenderness that replaces the sadness, and it goes away. Even if it's a lot of fear, something that is overwhelming, the fear goes through sadness to tears, and then it calms down. But it has to be physical. I cannot just contain the tears.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
I've had this issue since I've been practicing for how many years now, where when I get in a deep meditative state, my breath gets so soft and shallow that it's hard for me to get back to the breath. Like, I don't know if you have other ideas about, it's always go back to the breath, go back. When I'm deeply meditating, my breath gets so soft and quiet that it's hard for me to anchor with that. And I don't know if you have other thoughts about that.
It's not necessary to anchor with the breath. It's just that that's helpful, especially in the beginning. But I always think of meditation like a candle. You're building the steadiness of the mind is the wax of the candle, the concentration, that vastness in which we can rest in, where there's nothing happening except the blue sky. There aren't clouds necessarily going through it, but there might be. And you can rest in that vastness itself. You don't, if that's what works for you, you don't have to come back to the breath. As long as you're not using it, we can seamlessly weave the breath into that without using the breath as an anchor. So the wax, the more wax you have in a candle, the longer it'll burn. And then I think of the insight part of meditation, where we're noticing with curiosity where our mind gets pulled and working it as the wick of the candle. But you need that steadiness of mind. And if you are noticing that you have that and the breath getting very soft and shallow is, for me, one of the signs that that is happening. You might just rest in that awareness, in that vastness, without worrying about coming back to the breath.
Thank you all so much. It's so beautiful. I have a question I think is sort of a flip side of the questions that were already asked. But what arises, if something arises first that's not presenting as an emotional thing but a physical thing? So I'm wondering if the answers are sort of the same, because sometimes the physical will become a sadness.
So I'm sorry, sometimes the physical will?
Will also turn into a sadness. Mm-hmm. So maybe the answer is the same, but mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the wonderful things about meditation is our body will talk to us in this very profound way, and we'll find these pockets, sometimes these pockets of energy that exist, and oftentimes there is this sadness and grief underneath the sensations, and our job is just to welcome it, is just to turn toward it, and just with great compassion, and to understand it. What meditation teaches us about that I love is impermanence. Nothing stays the same. It's all changing from moment to moment. And in the times when things aren't so great, I take great comfort in that impermanence. And one of the things that happens is you'll notice that it tends to feel pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And when it's pleasant, we want to grasp at it and have it go on longer. And when it's unpleasant, we have this tendency to contract around it. And when we don't do that, when we learn how to move through it, very much in the way that was just presented to us with the tears, the energy starts to open up and float a little bit more. And we can go right into the center of it, and it will change. It will change. It's not this heavy black. And that sadness is also calling for something in us that we may not have been paying attention to throughout the course of our busy lives. It is, I love to think of feelings as orphans that I'm just bringing in and that are pointing to a need of some kind. They're calling for something in me. But the first step is always to welcome it rather than to push it, to turn toward it. Sometimes it's, I think of it like a lot of people, when they experience unpleasant emotions, will try to think of something else, go someplace else, turn the chatter up someplace else. And that's kind of like driving along in your car, and if you hear a noise, you turn the radio up so you don't hear it anymore. It doesn't really work. It's not going to take care of the problem. So whatever presents itself might be like the tip of the iceberg, but what you want to do is you want to go underneath it, and the feeling levels will take us underneath it. What I've found is even when they're really intense, they've never killed me or taken me. If they're too scary, because sometimes there's trauma there. There's trauma when our bodies open up to it. And when that starts to happen, sometimes we need to open the windows and let it in a little bit at a time so that we're equalizing the pressure rather than having this tidal wave of things coming at us. And again, I have found no better way. The short circuit is to pay attention to just where I'm experiencing it rather than the letting the sensations rather than letting the emotion just take over and then thinking about the emotion. So the thing that we notice in meditation is that there's a difference between being the thought or emotion and having an awareness of the thought or the emotion. Those two things are very different, and that's one of the things that's beautiful about meditation, is it trains us in that understanding.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I get confused about the insight part of insight meditation. And I notice certain issues or problems or things arising, and I can return to the breath, but I'm also thinking maybe I could spend some time with those things, and maybe that's kind of what I want to do in some way. That's to reflect, or I know not exactly analyze, but mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about how to walk that line?
Sure. It's always a little bit hard to talk about this because it feels like you're treating it as a linear process when it's really not a linear process. So the concentration helps the insight and the insight helps the concentration. But what you're talking about is curiosity. So if you find that something is there and it's strongly pulling the mind away, it's fine to go with it. It's fine to have an awareness, not to let it take you, but to have an awareness that you're going to spend some time with it and notice it. So a lot of times I'll ask myself, what's the nature of fear? What's the nature of anxiety? Sometimes I'll ask myself, I'll just take it beyond just a simple curiosity and apply some investigation to it. Who am I? All of these things are part of the insight part of meditation, but what we begin to notice, if we notice where our mind is pulled to over and over and over, then we can begin to ask some questions about what's being called for in us. But we don't want to get into that ruminating and brooding part of it. So curiosity is fine, and as long as you know that you're consciously leaving the breath, that's fine. And then, you know, we don't want to sit with it for the whole time. So you spend some time with it and then you come back to the breath or whatever you're using to develop that steadiness of mind. Does that help? What we have time for, one more.
I have an ergonomics question. I love sitting on the floor. It makes me feel very stable and grounded. I was preparing for this retreat by doing an 8-hour sit last Saturday, and I stayed with my pain and stayed with it, and it was a very profound experience. But what ended up happening is that I tore some cartilage in my knee. So maybe I shouldn't have stayed with it that long. And so my question is, you know, when is it too much pain? You know, I have my own concern that I didn't know that was too much pain, you know, and that I should have pulled back. But when is it too much pain? And how do you know the difference?
Well, meditation isn't about toughing it out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about toughing it out because we do that in all areas of our lives. So we're trying to cultivate the opposite experience. And it's great to understand that you don't have to scratch every itch and that you don't have to readjust every moment. One of the things we're going to be doing here is inviting a bell halfway through each meditation so that you can readjust. However, something very profound happened to me around this at a meditation retreat I was at. And what happened is I was like doing that. My knees just ached. And I was telling myself, just sit there, Sherry, just sit there. And I'm going, when's that damn bell going to ring? and then I realized that that's the attitude that I take toward everything. You know, that sheer tenacity, that I can do it. And so what I did is I said, okay, I'm going to allow myself to shift, but I'm going to wait till I can do it from a place of love. I cannot, it sounds so simple, but everything came tumbling down for me. It was one of the best retreats I ever had. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would suggest, is that you pay attention, and that, you know, if it's just a matter of not being able to get stable, you might want to just sit there longer. But if there's something that's really, really intensely painful, love yourself and just approach it from a place of love and readjust. Mm-hmm. We tough it out in a lot of places. We don't need to tough it out here. We're training for the opposite sort of attitude. I know there are some teachers that say, don't do that. I'm not one of them. But I also think you have to take responsibility for your own practice and find out what works for each of you. So you're hearing that the breath doesn't have to be an anchor. The teachers tend to teach about what works best for them, but it's really important for us to make that decision ourselves. Nobody can decide that for us. So I wouldn't wait until something happens. At a long retreat, when I'm doing a long meditation, I'll actually get up and move to a chair and alternate. And I don't find that that interferes with my concentration at all. In fact, if I'm so knotted up from sitting, that interferes with my concentration. So La's going to talk to us about walking meditation now.
I'm just aware I'm a little anxious that I don't have much time to do this, so is there a possibility of extending the time a little bit?
Plenty of time, and we can revisit it.
Okay, mm-hmm. Right. So walking meditation, a lot of the images of the Buddha and a lot of bodhisattvas are in a sitting position, and it's often taken as the most noble of the postures. But I think if YouTube existed in the time of the Buddha, we would watch him walking a lot. And so it's very important to see the walking meditation as a very vital and important and powerful part of the practice. And so it's about also transitions. So it's going from the sitting posture to a standing posture. And so I'm going to invite us to all, like, mindfully find your way up into a standing position. So notice yourself standing, having your feet about hip width apart, grounding yourself, bending your knees slightly if you need to, relaxing in your hips, allowing your shoulders to drop away from your ears as the crown of your head reaches for the sky. And just notice this powerful, stable, grounding posture for yourself, as standing is another posture that the Buddha prescribed as a way to meditate. Remembering to breathe, allowing yourself to relax. And then gently shift your weight over onto your right foot, the right side of your body, emptying out the left side of your body. And then gently lift your left foot, move it forward, and place it in front of you, and take that step. And then shifting and noticing the weight shifting from right to left, with all your weight now on your left side. As you lift, move, and place your right foot in front of you, just like that, and then just bring your feet back together and come back into a stable standing posture again. So in walking meditation, it really is about paying attention to every sensation in the movement of your steps as you're walking. And you can go as slowly or as quickly as you'd like. If you find that your mind is very busy this morning, you might want to move a little bit faster. And usually in the formal practice, we ask that you walk back and forth about 20 paces. And so there's a set beginning and a set ending point. And when you get to your ending point, just pause in this standing posture. And then just mindfully turn around and go back the other way. So you're just going to continue to do that back and forth, back and forth. And your steps are going to be another anchor, as you've used your breath as an anchor or sound as your anchor. And you're welcome to walk outside if you like. If you don't get too cold, the gym is now open. You can walk in there. We ask that you walk the short length of the gym. You only need 20 paces, so if everybody's walking in the same direction, that would prevent traffic jams. You can walk in the halls of the dorms. We ask that you don't walk in here, so in case people actually want to be sitting in the hall during walking meditation, that can happen. If you don't want to do like the designated 20 pace practice, you can actually just take a walk, take a loop around the campus. But not like a stroll like you would if you're like hanging out in your neighborhood, but just mindfully take a walk for yourself. And there's a way of doing sort of counting steps. So if you're walking quickly, you can be like one, one, two, one, two, three, one, two, three, four. So it creates this sort of like concentration practice where your mind is not thinking thoughts, but you're focusing on the counting of those steps. So I'll just do it again. So it's like one, one, two, one, two, three, one, two, three, four, five. And you go all the way up to 10. And then the cool part is then you go backwards. So it'll be like 10, 9, you know. Well, I can't do it. I have to go forwards first. I don't know how to do it backwards spontaneously. So practice with it. If you find it kind of funny, that's okay too. So, or just walk and just be aware that's what you're doing. You're just walking. And have it be fun. Enjoy outside. It's really beautiful. And if you want to be inside the gym and the halls in all the dorms are available to you. So thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.